in a New York state of mind.
All right, welcome to episode 82 of Hypebubbles Glee Chat. I never know what number it is. I'm always like, I don't know. The number's on my screen, but I never trust myself. But I think it's 82, right, guys? Anyone? No?
That seems right if I had a guess. I don't know. I really don't pay attention to episode numbers. It doesn't matter as much.
Yeah, we need to just probably stop doing that in general. Let's see.
Not counting the episode numbers. We're just going to make ambiguous podcast posts with just,
we'll just
Glee
have,
Chat,
like,
the episode where we talk about the finale.
Oh, God.
Yeah, episode 6000. Yeah, this is episode 82, so I was correct. All right, well, joining me tonight is Natalie in Australia. Hey, Natalie.
Yeah, hello. Good morning. Hello.
It's good. It's good evening where I am, but that's okay.
Good morning for me. Good morning to you all. Well, it's Saturday
good
for me.
Good so. Morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Oh,
that's
God.
My jam.
Let's
yeah,
not.
Let's not do it. We'll save the Glee Chat musical episode for season 6 of Glee. How about that? Which we always talk about, but
never. Hasn't that been like a really, like as long as we're talking about like often teased things? I really
like,
do feel
too
that
hard.
That was definitely talked about like in like episodes 1 through 10 of Glee Chat like every time.
I know. I don't know whatever happened. I mean, it's just really hard to do, but I really feel like eventually we'll do it. Don't you guys agree?
I don't know. It depends how much everyone likes singing.
I know. We really are missing out on two of our like main singing hosts. I think Jessica and Cody were really good on like just like shouting out in song, even more than I am.
Yeah. And Roxanne was a national show choir champion.
Yes, but she never sang on the show. I don't think I've ever heard her sing. Did she? I cannot remember.
No, yes, she did.
I cannot recall Roxanne's singing voice whatsoever, which is
silly. Mitch is also on the show, and Mitch, I just realized you and I haven't been on the same show in like a quite long time.
Yes, it has been a fortnight and
more. Yeah, and more, yeah. So welcome back. It's nice to hear our voices together, right?
Yes, we are a beautiful symphony.
Yeah, and speaking of voices, Mitch, I was listening to some of the video, or watching some of the video, rather, of whenever we were in New York together the first time, me, you, and Natalie, and everyone, and I thought your voice was different. Have you had a recent voice change?
No, not that
you can think of.
That's kind of a random thing. Other than like
it's
puberty,
so
I can't think of another way my voice would change.
Right,
get my tonsils taken out or anything special. So,
right, yeah, I don't know, just kind of weird. And also joining us is our newly established co-host, Caitlin. Hey, Caitlin.
Hello.
This is your first episode as an established official host.
And you get tone-deaf me as you're talking about your musical episode.
No. Mike Chang can't sing, but he found a way. So I feel like you can definitely be a part of that if we have it.
I wouldn't want to subject people to that. That might be torture.
Hey, don't cut yourself short. This is Glee Chat. Everyone's a champion.
There's always autotune.
Exactly. Well, welcome to the show, Caitlin, and congrats. And I hope you're having fun so far in your Glee Chat duties. And what a great time to sort of come on then, the season finale.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah, what a time to be alive,
you know?
Exactly. And just so everyone knows, Jack might be joining us throughout the day. The time difference is just kind of tough for us since we're all around the world. So at some point in this episode, Jack might just spontaneously appear, and that's fine by us. So we'll see. We have a full house.
If he doesn't, it's okay, because I won't have to fight with him. So That's true.
Yeah. Although I think Jack and I have similar thoughts about this episode, so maybe we're going to fight.
Not the episode. The episode isn't what I want to fight with him.
Oh, just in general, just his personality.
No, just his opinion on one of the artists covered in this episode is incorrect. But we'll see. Anyway.
We're going to
Can an epitome incorrect?
Yes, it can if you're Natalie. So, you know.
And that's what we love about Natalie Fisher. Well, we're going to do the episode a little bit differently. We're not going to break it down scene by scene by scene, every detail. We're just kind of going to group some things together because there are four of us and there's a lot to talk about. So we want to make sure we get to the points and do them concisely. So it's a little bit of a different format than usual. By the way, I don't know that we've had four people on at once. So I think this Caitlin situation.
Not in a while.
Yeah. So good job, Caitlin, for being part of it.
I do what I can.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's start recapping the season five finale. I mean, this is now, what, our third full season of Glee? Yeah.
For us, yes.
Yes, for us.
We've done season three, four, and five.
We've done so many. It's so weird. I can't even, like, keep it all in the back of my head. Like, I don't know. It's bizarre. But anyway, well, one of the first things that happened this episode was Brittany showed up pretty much out of nowhere. And, you know, where there's Brittany, there's Santana. That's how I always like to look at it. But as we talked about in the last episode, there had been a lot of drama surrounding Naya Rivera being a part of the finale, being dropped by Columbia, allegedly being fired by Glee, blah, blah, blah. One of the main rumors was that Santana was actually written out of the finale. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, and I'll get to each of your opinions in just a second, but it did seem like, what exactly was Brittany doing in New York if Santana wasn't there? I mean, yes, we can, you know, follow the plot and sort of play along and say, okay, that's what's going on. She's in Idaho, whatever it was. But, you know, the reality of the show is where anytime Brittany is in New York, it has to do with Santana. And you just have to wonder, were those rumors true? Was Santana obviously written out of the episode, not just to serve the plot, but because of other business type of, you know, whatever the drama might have been. Natalie, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it did kind of... Even Mercedes' line about saying, yeah, apparently they have the best wheat fields to follow through, it was like, whatever, funny. But it was... It seemed like really... Like, that whole scene seemed kind of stuck in there, like it might have been done last minute. But then again, I feel like Brittany, as an addition, they might have wanted Brittany in New York to be a foil for Mary Halloran, for the writer, to have someone there being like, well, I think it's awesome, rather than everyone just thinking she was crazy.
Oh, that's true.
I have so much hate for this Mary Halloran person, by the way, just so you all know. We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
We'll get there in a second. But I don't know, like, but it's also, so it does kind of seem like it was sudden. But then again, I'm kind of looking at the episode and I'm trying to feel like what holes Santana would fill, and I can't really see what her plot would have been except to be one of the gang, you know,
that's a good point.
Commentating on Rachel's show. But I don't know. I can't work it out either way. I mean, it does seem quite sudden.
I think, you know, we
obviously don't know the truth behind any of the gossip, but maybe if there was gossip and maybe if she's not fired – and maybe if there was drama, like that was part of the kind of like quote unquote punishment, like when Mark Salling got written out of like four episodes because he illegally broke his contract by releasing music independently or something like that, which is a thing that happened way back in the day. Like kind of you don't get the revenue of that episode or those episodes because of as like a punishment or something, and I'm like, this isn't school, but okay.
And
I guess,
you know,
it's possible.
I think it was also worth mentioning here, and then I'm going to ask you, Mitch, what you thought about Santana's absence. But you know, we had heard that, you know, there was some drama with Diana Agron a couple of seasons ago, and then they wrote her part by getting hit and wrote her getting hit by a car, basically, you know, and that On My Way episode. And everyone always, you know, the conversation surrounded the idea that, oh, if Ryan Murphy doesn't like you, you can tell because he writes the part of, you know, whatever he's feeling into the script.
Even the cast has said that. Jane Lynch has been like,
they've said
jokingly in episodes, they've kind of mentioned that. So and it's so not this, too far a leap to believe.
Right. And then in this episode, I just thought it was really bizarre that Santana was in Idaho at a Yeast-a-Stat commercial. It just felt really kind of degrading and a little bit like, I don't know, it brought back memories of that. Mitch, what are your thoughts about Santana not being in the finale? Do you think it has something to do with business, or did she just not fit in?
I necessarily think that it has something to do with business because of the giant question mark over why was Brittany hanging out there. Now, as for what Natalie said about Santana not filling in a hole, I can see where you'd see that for an episode like this, because it's just kind of like a gang episode and everyone can kind of do their own thing and it's fun. Yeah. You don't need to see what they're doing off screen. But the only time I could have seen her coming in to help things was when the group was both giving either Mercedes or Sam the advice to break up with each other. And I feel that she would have really given Mercedes some really sound advice then and there, especially with her new attitude. And it still would have had that Santana flair and sass. It would have harkened back to Santana bringing Rachel out of the dredges of her own misery during the Funny Girl opening night episode.
Mm. Caitlin, what about you?
I mean, I didn't miss her. They've, like, written her out of stretches of episodes at a time, and they're, like Natalie said, there was no spot where I was like, wow, Santana really belongs there. And Brittany did kind of feel shoehorned in, though I like what Natalie said about being the foil to the really obnoxious writer. But, like, just her randomly showing up feels super shoehorned in and just uncomfortable. So, like, if Santana had been there, like, well, I followed Santana here, so maybe it would be slightly less awkward. But
I mean, unless she's planning to return to Glee for season 6 now that she's had her baby, you know, Heather Morris. And, you know, they had that plot line at the end of her being, you know, part of Mercedes' team now. And we don't know how far ahead the, you know, season 6 is going to land us, but, you know, it could have been that it's meant to be, you know, we're meant to, oh, yeah, Britney still exists and her and Santana are, you know, part of Mercedes' musical entourage now. I don't know, but...
I mean, I was actually surprised that Britney had so much of a part in this season, considering, you know, the end of season 4 sort of felt like her sort of farewell and... I don't know. It just felt like every couple episodes this season when Brittany would show up, it was another conclusion of their plot line. So I kept being like, oh, okay, see ya, Brittany. And then she'd show up in another episode.
It's Brittany's big finale. This is Brittany's big finale. And now this is Brittany's big finale.
Right. So then here she is once again. But anyways. All right, let's move on a little bit. We'll talk more of that situation, I guess, as it throughout the rest of the episode. TV executive Mary shows up to get to know Rachel better so that she can write a script for her quote-unquote untitled Rachel Berry project. And Natalie, you have strong feelings about Mary.
Okay, I don't hate Kristen Schaal. I've seen her on heaps of comedy shows and all of that kind of thing. It's not like I have, like, I hate
the plays Mary, by the way.
Or anything, that's the actress. It's nothing to do with that or anything like that. I was actually quite looking forward to her being on Glee. I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting. My God, I don't think I've ever hated a human being as much as I hate that Mary Halloran person. I was I don't know, because it just irritated the hell out of me. I wasn't like, oh, this is ironically funny. I was like, I want to die. Like, I will say though
that the Mary and Artie scene was absolutely hilarious.
Oh yeah, it was so awkward. Like it was. Yeah. I understand how it was funny. I just wanted to hurt her. Like I just wanted to give her the brick or something. Like, sorry, I'm getting a bit violent. Though I've got to say, I did love. Speaking of that, this is just jumping ahead a little bit. She had a line when she was kind of telling Rachel about, you know, her script and how the one moment that she sort of got serious and sounded like she knows what she was talking about. And she was like, that, you know, people want, like, the one thing you lack, which is irony. People want shows about chubby girls who can't keep men and men who kill people. And I'm just like, that is so true. Yeah. Like, that is so true. There are so many shows right now that is exactly, I was just like, nailed it. So that was my favorite bit of Mary Halloran. But but the opening scenes where she was like, oh, it was just so abrasive and annoying and totally. Like, I don't know, I just wanted to die. But anyway, sorry.
Hey, Caitlin, what did you think about her?
She was too much. Like, Glee often does cracky stuff very well, and that's kind of the charming thing. This took it past the line of what is, like, funny to me. Like, I could not deal with secondhand embarrassment. I spent the entire... Every time she was on screen, I was watching through my fingers, like, turned away. Like, I cannot handle that.
My God. Mitch, what did you think about her?
Yeah, I have similar feelings to everyone. She made me absolutely miserable.
That's interesting. I mean, she was definitely awkward, and that was the character, but I didn't have the same reaction. I was just kind of like, oh, this girl's weird. But I don't know. The one scene with Artie just really cracked me up, and I thought she was hilarious. But yeah, she is a bit vile, right?
I literally don't think I've disliked a Glee presence more. And I'm trying to think, and I was like, no, I really hate her. But I don't know, like, I get what they were trying to do, and I think what they did worked. I think you are meant to feel like that.
Yeah,
you know
for
what
sure.
I mean? Like, yeah. But I was just like, oh, can't.
And then, you know, writing as Ryan Murphy does and producing and directing and whatever else he's doing nowadays for Glee, I'm assuming that this storyline really did fit in with someone or something dealing with Fox, which is weird because he might be, you know, putting a dig at someone that's they used to be, like, part of the production team, or maybe he's just kind of, like, creating like an archetype of a person who's like a writer for like, you know, a TV networks. I'm just hoping that it wasn't someone that he was like, you know, trying to dig at that was from Fox past or currently.
I mean, I felt like it was more of a kind of dig at the kind of like Gen Y, you know, New York hipster genius. Like, I came to New York to make, you know, replica, you know, medieval clothing and, you know, like, and sell it in, you know, exclusive, you know, pop-up shops and stuff like that. Like, that kind of, like, you know, absurd kind of hipster culture kind of thing. And I think that that's what it was possibly more of a dig at, but I don't know. It was, yeah, it was strange to me. I loved Blaine's line with her later as well, being like, you're a real writer from an actual television network, like, but yeah, I don't know, man.
Well, it's funny because I agree, Natalie, with Blaine. He's like legitimate in asking if she's for real because when once did she like have official verification? I don't know, like a phone call, like, oh, did Mary arrive or nothing? Like, we didn't.
I don't know.
This could have just been a random. She could have really just been like a random hobo off the subway, easily.
I don't know if that was the point exactly, but.
So later, Blaine pleads to June to keep Kurt in the showcase, but she says no. He breaks the news to Kurt, which of course is Kurt's worst nightmare, and he has a temper tantrum and smacks a bag across the room, and it's just sort of like, I wrote this in the recap. It's like every single episode of season 5 has had some big blow up between Kurt and Blaine. Not everyone, obviously, but I just mean, it seems like, how many times am I going to watch Kurt just sort of stomp his feet and like be pissed off? And I get it, maybe rightfully so at times, but it's like, what is the picture that Glee is trying to paint between these two? Because it just really seems a bit excessive.
I never know. I will just say one thing first up, that both in June's behavior, actually, with Blaine, I don't know if you guys heard the episode that I did with Jack when you guys were away, but Jack said that a lot of the fandom, I had not heard this, but he said that a lot of the fandom had been reading June's behavior and her like dislike of Kurt and her encouragement to Blaine as homophobic.
I
did not think it at all, but this episode where she keeps like being like, oh, your friend, I was just like, yeah, okay, I totally get it. They're not outright saying it, but yes, I get it. I didn't think it at all. Like, I thought it was just a personal, like, originally, I was like, I didn't get that. But like, now I'm just like,
Natalie, that was the first thing I thought of, because that's happened to me a lot, where, for instance, I'll be referencing John, and then someone will like,
John Thrasher.
John, my fiance, not John Thrasher, the host of Glee Chat. Anyways, I'll be referencing John, and sometimes, every once in a while, people will refer back to him as your friend, and I like I felt the ping of like hurt that
this episode. I felt it. This episode, I got it. In the first time, when she was just like, "You should break up with that boy," she wasn't belittling like him being a boy or anything like that, but she was just. But I couldn't really work out why she wanted to break up, except for that she just didn't like her. I thought it was personal. I didn't think it was homophobic. Yeah. Now I think it's homophobic.
Well, I mean,
I didn't get that sense at all.
It'd be strange if it's homophobic. And sorry, Kate, I'll let you go after this. But like, it'd be strange if it was homophobic that she wanted them to break up, because it's like, it's not going to turn Blaine straight if they're not dating
anymore.
Well,
old ladies might be delusional about things
yeah,
like that.
That's true.
But I don't know. But Caitlin, yeah, I didn't get it the first time I saw it, but the way that she kept calling him your friend, I was like,
I saw that more as generational, like, she's older, and that's kind of, like, a thing you would hear older people saying, like, she was very aware that they were together. She makes her living, well, not living, but, like, all her time and her money goes to the arts, where there is a large proportion of gay people. Like, she's not going to be, you know, patronizing all these people. Like, I just don't see that. Like, for me, the way I read it was very much that she was so frustrated with Blaine, who she was trying to, you know, help launch his career, who kept bringing in Kurt when she had made, like, it clear she was only interested in Blaine because she likes him better. Fine. But
she, but don't you think Blaine, that there was an air of sort of, like, flirtation between June and Blaine?
No.
I don't think that June was trying to sleep with Blaine or
anything. No, that's not what I said. I think that there was definitely, she saw his she knew how attractive he was. She kept saying, oh, follow my lead and you'll be a star. There was definitely an understanding that, you know, here's this young, strapping young man that she was even a little attracted to, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's like made her feel a bit, you know, child.
Yeah, it made her feel, exactly. Yeah. So for me, I definitely read it as homophobic, and I think that she wasn't willing to accept that he was gay and never really thought about it. And I think that was why she was very against Kurt being a part of it, because maybe Kurt is too feminine, or, you know, she's just trying to make Blaine the star, which is fine, which makes sense, gay, you know,
and
whether
Blaine
she thought that or not.
Blaine is a literal, like, he is a ringer for the kind of guys in the 40s and 50s that were very big celebrities who were closeted, like Marlon Brando and stuff like that. But, but I don't know. Like, regardless, I think the way that she kept saying your friend was belittling, whether it was because it was homophobic or not, like, it was kind of weird to me. But I don't know. Like, I could take it either way, but I didn't originally say it. But this episode, I did think it more. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, by the end, she was kind of, the fact that by the end she was fine with it, I was like, I don't know. But
yeah. Caitlin, what were you saying?
I just thought she was frustrated that Blaine would not focus on himself and kept trying to put some of the spotlight on Kurt when she made it clear. And she's like, no, I care about you. Stop. I've already told you that I don't want to deal with him because I'm focusing my energy on you. And it was more frustration out of that. That's how I read it.
I think it's a fine line. I think it could be both, really. But who's to say? You know, who knows what she was thinking? Interesting. I like that conversation.
But yeah, in that he did, so he performed, the thing about that though, about the freaking out, he performed All of Me, which was, was okay. Like, it was, I was like, all right, this is nice, I guess.
I didn't like that, actually, that performance.
Do you know the original song? Was it big?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do know the original. No, it's actually not that big of a song. I mean, it's a John
Lennon song.
It was
on the radio I listened to a lot, so I knew it, but I don't know how big it was everywhere.
I just didn't – it's not the song I didn't like. It just felt like a different sort of range for Darren to be singing in, and it kind of like –
it's not got a great falsetto in some songs. But it was – I didn't hate it. Like, I don't know. It was fine.
But
I
have to be honest. I usually choose whether I like or not like a song based on whether I can sing it, so – yeah, that's kind of where I was with that.
My thing about this whole situation, though, which might make me a terrible person, seriously, this is just how my brain works, and I'm just going to out myself as, like, a terrible person or the way that I would try and play the situation. Yeah. If that was me, if I was Blaine and June had said that to me, I would have not told Kurt the truth. I would have told him that stuff had changed and that I'd fought for it. I mean, it's true. Like, it would be semi-true. Like, you know, I'd say that stuff had changed and that I'd fought for it, but that he couldn't cross June about it. And basically, I wouldn't have said that I'd been lying the whole time, basically. I would have covered that part up, and I would have said that it was a recent change, which might make me terrible and manipulative, but I feel like it would have made the situation a bit less dramatic and with the same result, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Mitch, what were your thoughts about Kurt's reaction?
It was a little bit extreme, and I was really sad for whatever food that he had there, because I really wanted it. I was really hungry watching that part.
I laughed so hard when he hit the bag.
Yeah,
I was just like, God, calm down.
I know. Yeah, I agree with what Natalie was saying, how she doesn't know where they're trying to take clean and what they're trying to portray with this couple anymore. It's like they're up and down and left and right and makeup sex and large frustrations, and it's just really weird. It doesn't feel consistent.
It also is a weird place for them to be at this point in the season. I mean, this is the season finale. I talked about this last episode. You know, there wasn't much of Blaine at all in the last episode, which was written by Chris Colfer. It's sort of like, okay, they're on good terms. We'll talk about, like, exactly what happened at the end where Blaine basically, I guess, moves back in. Well, we'll talk about that, but let's move on from that. Sam is getting seduced by a photographer at an audition, and she basically kisses him. Sam tells Mercedes that he cheated on her, but she forgives him because she realizes that he didn't cheat. But earlier in the episodes, Mercedes performs an original song called Shaking My Head with Brittany as a backup dancer. And this was an original song, and I don't know. It's interesting how Glee creates these original songs because they're actually pretty good.
So many thoughts about Mercedes' weird original song marketing.
Okay, go for it.
It's all really weird. It's all still a version of, like, Hell to the No, if you know what I mean. None of them are serious songs. They're all, like, this wasn't a bad song, but it was, like, a joke song, if you know what I mean. Like, it wasn't a joke to her. And you even saw her album cover in the background, and her album title is Park and Bark, as in that joke that they made about, you know, the kind of person who just stands and sings, if you know what I mean.
I love it. That's a really good analogy for what you, if you had to, like, give what Mercedes was. That part made me laugh so much, Natalie, when I read that too. I'm glad I didn't even notice that. Yeah, it was really nuanced. But sorry, Natalie, go on.
And that was in the background. And her whole, like, marketing as a, you know, as a singer, as a pop star, is this weird... They're not taking it seriously, if you know what I mean. They're giving her these songs that are, like, completely... Like, she wrote a song about her weave, you know, and it's still that is the thing. Like, this song, like, is, you know, shaking my head as in, like, the internet slang, like, and it's,
yeah.
And the lyrics, that it wasn't that, like, it was musically a bad song, but I don't know, it was weird, and I don't know why they're not giving her a serious song.
This was one of those scenes where I would say it felt a little bit weird with, like, maybe it was one of those scenes that Santana was meant to be in, because I thought it was kind of weird that she only had one backup dancer, and it was Brittany. It really felt, I don't know, how many people do you know that are singers or performers that have one backup dancer? Like,
she had all of Ben.
Yeah, I know, but it just felt like Brittany was sort of her one backup dancer. I don't know, it just felt weird to me. It felt like it needed somebody else in it.
I'd agree to that. And also, I wasn't too impressed with the dance moves they gave Brittany.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, actually.
It just looked like freestyling and kind of weird. I don't know. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Anyways.
Well, I mean, this reminds me of this one time that I went to go see the Jonas Brothers at, like, a local mall.
Okay.
It was before they were famous.
Keep going.
It was, like, before they were famous, so I'm going to toss out a year. I'm going to say it was probably, like, 2006. And they were still, like, on the rise. And, like, seeing them perform in the mall was so much like what Mercedes was doing, because they had those kind of backup dancers that were like doo-wopping in the background the whole time, as opposed to, like, choreographed together or anything. If anything, maybe they did that on purpose to give us, like, an authentic, this is a mall performance feel.
The whole mall tour thing is so, again, secondhand embarrassment. It's like, that many people wouldn't be screaming and, like, asking for autographs at a mall tour unless it was someone they already knew. Like, how do these people already know Mercedes? Like, how? Like, and it reminds me
about it. She still has that famous song that Sam put on YouTube.
Oh, I suppose. Oh, but that's still true. I don't think that's the thing. I don't think Glee remembers that, Mitch. Don't. But it reminds me of, like, friends I know who've worked for record labels who, like, basically when they have, like, appearances by artists at, you know, say, you know, like it used to be at, like, TRL or whatever, like, live crowds, there used to be people, like, from the label or the PR who would make, like, hand-drawn signs and stuff like that, and then, like, pass them out to the people who'd showed up to, you know, watch the live thing to make them look more hyped up and stuff like that. Like, sort of, do you know what I'm talking about?
Like, that the
label would hand make fan signs,
so
it looked like people cared more than
that
they
still
did.
Happens, by the way.
Yeah, I know, and it just kind of reminded me that I'm like, has the label hired all these people to, like, and creating hype is like a, you know, by, like, you know,
a
by sort of
term,
grassroots thing is a thing, and and I don't know, mall tours, man, it's a weird thing.
I think that Nicki Minaj was entirely created by her label, like the hype around her, because I was like, who is listening to her or cares about her? And then suddenly she's on the VMAs, and I'm like, what is going on with this girl? I feel like they might have hired somebody to sit there and refresh her YouTube page, her YouTube videos too.
Oh, so. My God.
Because I'm just like, she's not interesting or talented. Anyway, that's a whole other show. That's after Glee Chat After Dark, if we want to go there.
You know what? I have a very pertinent Glee Chat After Dark insert for that Jonas Brothers thing. So they're all done performing and everything, and I see their bodyguards letting them out of, like, this back room, and I'm kind of just leaning against this large pillar inside the mall, and they just kind of walk right past me, and they just go right into the bathroom right there, like, the public bathroom. They didn't even check to see if anyone was in there or not, and I was just like, oh my God, the Jonas Brothers are in the bathroom that I was just in, and they were like, I got a picture. I don't know what happened to it, obviously, like, you know, 10 years ago.
Of them in the bathroom?
I wish, no. I'm joking. No. No, of them like 5 feet away from me. And I was so excited then. So I get the whole hype about, like, I don't know, like seeing a performer in the mall because, yeah, all that hype just kind of like coagulate in one little spot.
Yeah, but you'd already
so feels
heard
more
of them.
Exciting.
You went to the mall on purpose to see the Jonas Brothers. I don't
understand. How had I heard of the Jonas Brothers in 2006? That's weird. Were they famous?
I don't know. I want to know how people know Mercedes. But speaking of Jonas Brothers, God, this is getting ridiculous. If legit, everyone who is interested in the pop industry whatsoever should read the article Joe Jonas wrote for Vulture about, like, his time as a Jonas Brother.
Oh,
it is phenomenal. It is so good.
It's a giant dump on Disney. Like biggest
he's
ever.
So smart, and basically the way that he talks about, like, the way that the stuff that happened to them and, like, how they were marketed and stuff is incredible. So yeah, read.
So if we can find that, let's put it in the links section.
I will. I will send it to you, John. But yeah, if you Google Joe Jonas Vulture, you will find it. It's phenomenal. But anyway, moving on from Joe Jonas.
No, but one other thing about hype. Which, have you guys ever seen that YouTube video where? It's like a social experiment or something where this guy sort of hires like four people to be like freak out about him in Times Square. And then he comes
over.
People
are like, who's that?
People are like, who's that? So they start freaking out. And then everyone else starts freaking out. And then girls are screaming and running after him. They don't even know who he is. And this guy. Oh, it's so fascinating to see it happen.
I remember being at a concert when I used to live in London. It was a Fall Out Boy concert, actually, John. And we had – and I was around the corner at the back of the venue, and these girls come screaming around the corner being like – and, like, so I guess some other friends were there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And they were, like, crying and, like, oh, my God, crying. We just met some of Fall Out Boy, and their friends were like, oh, my God, who? And they were like – we don't know.
Oh my
like,
God.
What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? You literally, you're crying and screaming, and you don't like you probably met a roadie who was like teasing you, like and I was just like, how is that like, God. Like, I don't know, like to have that kind of like hype about like without literally already knowing you know what you're invested in. I don't know. Anyway. I don't understand why
bizarre.
People know Mercedes at the mall, but whatever. That's fine.
Fair enough. Later, the group of the girls plus Kurt say that they think Mercedes should break up with Sam because she's going to be on tour and Sam's not mature enough and he's blah, blah, blah. Caitlin.
Belittling towards him, but go on.
Yeah. Caitlin, if you were in that room with Rachel and Kurt and whoever else was there, would you have told Mercedes to break up with Sam at this point?
I mean, I think she had every reason to reassess where they were going.
Yeah.
But it was kind of harsh for both sets of friends to be like, you guys need to break up because Sam's
definitely.
Not getting laid. Like,
yeah.
That's what your right hand is for, place. Sam. Come on.
Oh, God. Like, I don't know if it was their place to, like, sit there and or be like, yeah, you
that's
guys
what
need
I thought.
To break up. Like,
I was like, shut up. Who are you?
Yeah.
I figured that was going to make everyone else just as upset as it made me, quite frankly, because it was really obnoxious that everyone seemed to care so much about the times that Sam gets off. Like, why does that have to matter to them at all?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's essentially what they're talking about in this Sam can't handle you being away thing. Like, that's it.
I don't know. It was really weird, but I mean, that was a predecessor to the whole photography thing, which, you know, it wasn't like that happened and then they were like break up. It was that and then the kind of quote unquote cheating happened.
And during that scene, Sam sings Girls on Film. And what were your thoughts about that? Because I didn't like it. Mitch.
There's a song in that suit? Hello.
That's true. That suit was great.
It felt like they packed a lot of musical numbers into this episode that didn't really
add anything.
I like that song though, and I mean, this reminded me of when we had Jake performing that Black and White song,
Janet Jackson, Rhythm Nation. Oh my god!
It reminded me of that because of just like the dance moves, the woman fawning over a shirtless man, and all that kind of stuff.
But Rhythm Nation was really, really incredible. That whole scene from, was that earlier this season? I think. Ugh.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a time warp because
yeah.
But I like the song. I like the hairstyling of the woman too when they got into like whatever it was, like the 80s or 90s hairstyles.
I liked her before. I did not like her when she got all like fantasy made up. I liked her.
Oh, so cute.
That scene could have not had a song in it and been the same to me, if you know what I mean. That could have just been a legitimate like background music, fashion scene, or they could have. Glee doesn't use enough background music that they're not singing, if you know what I mean. That song could have had that scene could have had a song playing in the background rather than them singing it and it be the same scene.
That's interesting.
I don't know, and I feel like that there should be more music that they don't sing in Glee, which sounds a bit weird and defeats the purpose, but I would like it. I don't know, and not that it's like the biggest point of this entire experience, but given like what he kind of said to Mercedes when he came home, like given what the photographer ended up kind of leading into and then what he said, number one, I was kind of expecting, you know, that they would have actually slept together. I don't know, you know, just because I wasn't expecting the whole crying thing. But then when I heard that, and also from what the photographer was kind of saying, I don't really know about modeling. I don't know if the photographer is usually the one that picks the casting anyway, but whatever. That doesn't
really
matter.
Definitely not, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't really matter. But I didn't hate her. And I didn't think she was necessarily actually trying to sleep with Sam. I thought she was just trying to get good pictures.
Me too.
I thought she was like just trying to like, you know, create the situation that she wanted for photographs.
Right. Because she asked everyone to leave so that she could have her moment with him, whether it be sexual or not.
I don't think she was actually like, I want to sleep with you. I think she was just trying to create the mood to get the photographs that she wanted. And I kind of liked her. I didn't hate her. But but yeah, I understand obviously him freaking out, which was sort of cute, I don't know, when he came home, but whatever. Yeah.
Caitlin, what about you? What are your thoughts?
There's no way the photographer can know this, though. I mean, Sam was in, like, his pants were open and he was in his underwear. So he was already very vulnerable, and she's holding his career. So she has a lot of power over him in this situation. But Sam is so, like, he has these body image issues from, like, time as a stripper, and, like, he probably lost his virginity to someone while he was stripping, and like there's all this stuff surrounding sex with him that makes this scene very uncomfortable for me to deal with.
That's a good point.
That is true. But I'm not saying like he brought it on himself, but he's also in the modeling industry, so it's interesting, you know, that he made that choice to be in the modeling industry when he is kind of his body is getting treated as marketable, you know, when he has those issues. And it would be something that perhaps, you know, now that he's not doing it anymore, would be, you know, God, I'd love to see like Sam's therapy sessions, if you know what I mean, like about his choices, because it is a weird choice to make, unless he thinks his body is the only thing of worth about him, which kind of does tie in. Yeah.
He said that last season in the Men of McKinley thing.
Oh, yeah. That happened. Yeah, that episode happened. God.
And you know what, Caitlin? I just had a little flashback to Veronica Mars Rewatchable, where they had a therapy episode. And I feel that if Glee was to, you know, take heed and do like their therapy episode, it would do what it did to Veronica Mars. It fleshes out characters in ways.
What, like, did it show like every character in a counseling session or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was written in for legitimate reasons, and I think it was all about the death of a character and all that. So, I mean, that would have worked, you know, awesomely for Finn. That would have been.
I would love to have. Obviously, they can't copy it directly, but God, I'd love to see an episode of Glee like that.
Mm-hmm. They can't copy it correctly. I feel like they wouldn't mind copying that kind of thing directly at this point.
Most of these characters have issues that need therapy.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's exactly what I was.
I mean, we could go anywhere from like Blaine's whatever laughing gas and or controlling issues or whatever else he's got going on. Brittany's perhaps sexual abuse of her past. I mean, it goes on and on and on about how deep and dark the psychological injuries are to each one of these characters. Yeah. It's horrible.
Well, speaking of bizarre situations, we read Rachel's first script, which includes all these really bizarre television motifs, which include Kurt in a dinosaur costume that he found in the Bronx. Let me just tell you, by the way, there is no way on earth Kurt would ever go to the Bronx. I am very, like, street tough, and I would never go to the Bronx. It is a sketchy place to be. That's the end of that story. Rachel's eating in the bathtub a whole sheet cake and, like, acting like a whole different person. We get these this sort of, you know, flash sideways to what this show might be. And it's really just uncomfortable, I think, is the best word to put it, best way to put it. I don't know. It was just really bizarre, and it was, like, trying to hit on all these bizarre television motifs. And, Caitlin, what were your thoughts as this sort of played out on the show?
Oh, I was watching through my fingers again. Yeah. So uncomfortable. And like, it was like anything Brittany would write if she were writing the show.
Yeah, which she loved. So that made sense.
Oh, it was so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, Natalie, what were your thoughts? Same thing?
Yeah, I wanted to die. And I got really annoyed at sorry that I keep being so overdramatic, but my God, it was awful. Yeah. The one thing... Sorry, this is a total slight random thing, is that when Kurt was in the dinosaur suit and the way that he was speaking to Rachel when he was sitting on the toilet and she was in the bath, mm-hmm. I didn't know that he could lower his voice that much to speak. Like, I know that he can kind of do voices, but I didn't know he could lower his voice that much to speak, which gives me hope for this new project that he's doing that I just reported on Hyperbole, which is that he's got a very, very, very big part in a biopic of Noel Coward, yeah. Who's a British playwright. People are whatever, either pro or anti that, but he's obviously not British and he's going to have to do an accent. However, Noel Coward had a very, very, very unique voice, even for a British person, which is a lot lower than Chris Colfer's speaking voice. And I didn't know he could drop his voice that much. And so knowing that he can, I feel like that he will be able to do this accent really
he
well.
Sounds
so,
like Carson Phillips in Struck by Lightning.
Carson does lower his voice a fair amount actually as well, so
he had the same affect in
that kind of like thing about it. But
that's how I feel about this episode. I'm just kind of like anyways
just you can read about that on hyperbole.com if you're interested in Chris Colfer's new movie, but I was just quite impressed with his vocal skills, I guess, and so that should be good. The show made me want to die, and every time Brittany was like, oh, it's so awesome, I was like, I want you to die as well, Brittany. Sorry, I'm being a bit dramatic. I've been watching a lot of Hannibal, so I feel like I just want a lot of people to die. Cause, like, that's
aggressive.
A solution to all problems is just kill
very
them.
Aggressive. So, it's very good. Just to kill them. Yes. Very aggressive, Natalie, tonight, but it's kind of fun, so I'm into it. Kurt eventually gives Blaine his approval to be in the showcase, which this scene was so bizarre to me. And just as a reminder, it's the one that Blaine was sort of feeding the pigeons. And I'm like, okay, Blaine, like, why are you waiting for Kurt to give you the acceptance of this? That's my main problem with it. Does anyone, is that, I haven't talked
I
to any,
have
either of you about
such
that.
Such strong thoughts about this scene because Caitlin, I want to hear yours first.
Caitlin, let's hear what you have to say. And were you in par with what I was saying about how Blaine is constantly seeking Kurt's approval and I don't understand? Okay, I'm just making sure because I don't know what the fandom is thinking about it. But go ahead.
So my biggest thing with this episode and like their first fight, every fight Blaine has is literally the exact same thing. Like Kurt does something, Blaine gets insecure and does something stupid and then tells Kurt and then he apologizes all tearfully and Kurt's like, I'm never going to trust you again until he magnanimously decides to take Blaine back because he's always morally superior. And Blaine is just like,
exactly
you're the best thing that has ever happened to me.
I'm so sorry. You're so much better than I am. Please accept my apology. Natalie, is that what you thought too?
No, I thought they were. I thought I legitimately. I mean, yes, I agree with you. Okay. But Kurt's bird metaphor, when he was always like, you never know if today is going to be the day when people, you know, they're going to drop like someone's going to drop your heart. I legitimately thought that this was the breakup. I thought this was going to mean like you never know if today is the day when like something's going to be like,
you know,
today's going to be the day when something is like just something you can't take anymore. Like even if it's just a small thing, like the straw that breaks the camel's back, if you know what I mean. Yeah, and I thought this was the breakup. And then they totally turned it around and I was like, oh, okay. but I was literally going, oh my God, they're breaking up. He's going to be like, look, it's not just this one thing, but this is the straw that broke the camel's back. And well, I thought that's where the bird metaphor was going, and I got excited, and then it wasn't that. So,
Sorry, I'm about to sneeze.
Okay.
No, I saved it. Mitch, I'm curious about your thoughts, too, but I think, Natalie, you just hit a great point, is like, is that what's going to happen in season six? Like, are all these bizarre conflicts...
Are they aware that they keep having this fight? Like,
yeah.
I don't, like, understand.
Are we leading to a big argument where eventually Blaine says, I can't do this anymore. Like, this is, it's Please. Been too much. Yeah. I can't. Mitch, what are your thoughts? Weigh in on that.
Yeah, I'm really game for Clean to be over with because I agree with Caitlin's statement that all of the arguments do fit within the same theme. It's tiring for me to even have to watch it to know that they're not going to move on past it. They're not a healthy couple because they don't have a good balance. They just need the affirmation of each other to do everything when they should just be able to be more independent. But they're not.
I love that.
The independence is exactly what they're lacking. So I don't know exactly what they're going to do with Blaine past Kurt because all I've ever known of Blaine is he is Kurt's love interest and then boyfriend and then fiance. It's pretty rare. It's pretty rare that I feel that I know Blaine past Kurt. I know even when you're saying like they're not dating, etc., etc. But to me, it's almost like the show's end game for Blaine is that he has to be in a relationship with Kurt or that even if he's
he'll
not,
die.
It's good. Or he'll die. Or if he's not in his relationship with Kurt, not only will he die, but it just won't be A, as interesting, or B, he'll be yearning more toward getting back with Kurt and looking to get over him and all that. It doesn't seem like he has like a life and a vibe outside of Kurt at all.
Oh, it's so annoying because he freaking did when they introduced him.
Yeah, exactly.
And Caitlin will feel me on this. I could and did have written so many thoughts about like what Blaine was like pre-season three.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Like they gave so many hints to what his past was like. They gave so many hints in the acting of kind of his like just who he was and the way he handled things and stuff like that. And you know, and yes, he was, you know, putting on, you know, a confident mask and all of that kind of thing, but like God, without it, like now he's just like, yeah, they've diminished him. If they had kept him on the level they kept him in season two, you would know a lot more about Blaine than now all you know is sad Kurt Blaine.
I felt I got to know him very well in season four once, you know, he became friends with Sam and Sam kind of snapped him out of it. He got connections with the new directions. He was their leader. He was, you know, hanging out with Sam and Tina, being a superhero and having lock-ins. Like, he was having so much fun. He was being his own person, and we got to know him as an individual so well. And then he proposed, and he's regressed back to being an accessory for Kurt.
He actually does remind me so much of, like, that kind of stage of relationships where it's like, I don't know, just in high school and being like breaking up with someone and then ending up kind of being okay with that. And then that if they come back or if you get another chance with them and you take it and in retrospect, you're like, yeah, you really shouldn't have done that because it was fine. Like it was, you were going along and moving on with your life. And it was like, and it's like you're trading off like being like fun and independent for like going back to something that another part of you, you know, thinks is the number one priority. And I just don't know if they weigh out in the end. But like, I don't know. It's so weird. And I don't know. He's dumb.
He's dumb. More on that in just a second, because we get into more great Blaine and Kurt stuff. This is a very Blaine and Kurt episode, actually, now that we get to talking about it. Eventually, Mercedes breaks up with Sam, saying that if she ever changes her mind, she will give him a call. And I actually thought this was a joke, because...
About
I'm
what,
sorry.
Having sex? Like,
yeah, yeah, I was so like, I was waiting for the punch. Sex. Yeah, I was like waiting for the punchline, and then it never happened. I was like,
she's going to be on tour, and he's going to be at home anyway. They won't be having sex anyway.
Yeah. Like, yeah, regardless.
Why didn't he just go on tour with her if he was quitting modeling anyway?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
He could dance. Then she could have, like, weird blonde backup dancers. Like, Brittany and Sam. Freaky and Aryan, but like
yeah, I was gonna say an Aryan backup singer, backup dancers, that would be funny. You know, in this scene, it was sort of like, you know how Glee sort of puts a little bow on these sort of plot lines because the soft little piano music is in the back, and you really get the sense that it's the final like moment. And I was like, really? That's really what's going on? This is where all these great, you know, and I think it's been great writing between Sam and Mercedes since they've been in New York. That those two characters I was never particularly interested in, but I was sort of invested, you know. And I don't know, it just felt like, oh, the viewer rode along in the train of the Sam and Mercedes situation only to have it crash into a wall. And, you know, we'll find out eventually what happens with Sam's character as we get to that point. But I'm just sort of like, okay, like what – so what is the point? What is the, like, bigger – what's moving this plot along if that's what happens by the end of the season? I don't know. I just thought it was weird.
I've seen some speculation that they're going to try to give Sam Sadie's the Finchel ending that they had initially planned, like with what happens with Sam at the end.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I don't like it, but I've seen speculation about that.
Can you be more specific about the Finchel ending for our listeners?
When Ryan Murphy said that his initial planned ending was that Finn was going to be the teacher of the Glee Club, and then Rachel was going to be very successful on Broadway, and then the show was going to end with her coming to his classroom and saying, "I'm home." Like, that was it. So I'm seeing, like, well, maybe they're going to make Sam Finn, and then Mercedes is going to come to him at the end.
I don't think anyone would be comfortable with that. No. Like, yeah.
So for
especially
those of you listening at Fox,
that was going to be the Finchel thing, like, you know.
Yeah, and for those of you listening at Fox, take heed. That would not go over well with this fandom. So there you go, Mitch. What are your thoughts about that potential ending?
It would feel very awkward to have Sam all of a sudden become Finn because, yes, we did have him start off with okay, we need a new male lead underneath Finn, and Finn did take him up. You know, and under and all that stuff. But besides that, he doesn't have too much in common with Finn or kind of what Finn stood for. He was always shoved into that leader role and had to take charge of new directions, but he never really wanted to. And, you know, I really feel that he'd be better off not being in charge of new directions. I think that he'd be much happier.
Remembering his reaction to, like, Schuster when Schuster was, like, telling him about, like, nationals stuff, and how he was, like, crying and, like,
The real question is, by the end of season four, we still didn't know exactly where Sam was living, and now he's back in Lima. Where again? Because
he just must be in Finn's...
got an apartment or something?
No, it's Finn's ever-changing basement.
Yeah.
He's living...
How many people is that house by now?
School, obviously.
I know,
like,
that's what I was going to say. Is the
there was legitimately a person in at SUNY Binghamton, John, that lived in the, like, boiler room. It was, like, a well-known thing, like, amongst students. SUNY Binghamton. Binghamton is a town in New York.
Yeah, Binghamton's near where Karen lives.
Yes. Okay, so someone was living in, like, the boiler room.
In the boiler room.
She must have, because it was kind of like this weird urban legend that turned out to be true. It was really wild.
Those who don't know, Karen is our friend who is also on Another Teen Wolf podcast.
She's a hyperbole editor.
Yeah, she gets casually mentioned on the show, and I'm not sure that everyone listening knows who she is.
Like that time that John met up with her in New Jersey or something, right?
I met up with her at Ocean City. Yeah, Ocean we City. Talked about that.
Yeah, so it's really funny that you guys mentioned that, because it was the first thing that came to my mind. I was like, I mean, that happens every once in a while. I think the guy, he was like a student, and he just didn't want to pay, like, the tuition for, like, you know, room and board. The man who lived in the boiler room. So Sam is definitely the man who lived in the boiler room from now on.
Obviously, it's kind of... What does it say? I mean, they probably thought about, okay, what would the final shot for Sam be back in McKinley? Oh, wait, we don't know where he's even living. I guess we have to put him...
But legitimately,
the hallways of McKinley.
Nothing else proves that it's Lima, if you know what I mean? Like, because they don't
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like unless you put him in, I don't know, the Lima Bean, which right, I would have preferred if you'd had, like, the Lima Bean logo, you know, the door in the background of...
Yeah, totally.
No, because it would have been, okay, you're an adult, we can tell where you are, you're at home.
Maybe Sebastian's like, in the background.
Oh, like, Sebastian can't be in the background. Sebastian's got a job.
He's got a job running really quickly around
people. Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Saving heroes. For those who don't know, he's Flash on the CW, by the way. Okay, and later on, so we'll get to the final scene with Sam. Rachel sings the song Glitter in the Air by Pink, and Mary sort of realizes, wait a minute, this girl's actually very talented. And earlier in the episode, she says, no, sorry, the a cappella thing is dead, which is hilarious because it is kind of Glee's coming to an end.
Yeah, that was very ironic when they were like, yeah. I was like, in my high school Glee Club, and she's like, oh, we can't use that. Like, that's...
Yeah.
I've never heard this Pink song before in my entire life. Just say, was it a single or was it like an album?
No, it was on the Vampire Diaries. If not that, Pretty Little Liars is like a slow, is like one of those slow songs in the end of the episode.
I'm not gonna know that.
Maybe. No, it's, I think it was. Well, you asked how it became popular. That's exactly where I knew it from, at least, because I knew that it gained popularity after it was on its respective show. You know what I mean? And John, you might be right about it being a single. I don't know if it was a single that it was like very radio popular. I heard it maybe once or
like
twice.
Pink. I don't have like, I don't have like album Pink albums, but right. like I like Pink.
Yeah,
and
same here.
I know many a Pink song, and I would, but I've literally never heard this song before in my life.
She's performed this. She does all these like Cirque du Soleil type of performances across all these award shows. And I remember, I think it was the Grammys or something. She performed this song and literally was throwing glitter in the air. And it was actually really, really beautiful. But I have to say that Rachel's version of it, I didn't really like.
I loved both. It's one of those situations where I can't pick a love between either the original or this one, because I'm very familiar with Glitter in the Air by now, and I really was just like, first off, I was upset that I was spoiled that the song was going to be sung, because if I wasn't, and I just had Rachel stand up, you know, on that stage and start singing the song, I probably would have cried from shock and happiness. I love the song that much. It's really close to me and means a lot, so I was very, very happy that it was especially Rachel that sang it, because I just did it really well for me.
I feel like she said this about a few songs, but allegedly this is Lea Michele's literal favorite song of all time.
Oh,
and she asked if she could sing it. Like, apparently this is her, like, request. They must have seen, like, what would be, like, and I mean, it's quite appropriate, like, for her, you know, for them to say, you know, what would, you know, if you, they're making a show about you and your character, like we made about Glee for you, what would be the one song for you to kind of... show that, and apparently this is her literal favorite song. So
that's interesting. Where did you hear that? That's amazing. That
from her. She said it in interviews or on Twitter.
Oh, she called you. She was like, "Hey, Natalie."
Yeah, she called me up, and she was like, "Oh yeah, hey Natalie. So I want to talk to you about my favorite song, Glitter in the Air by Pink." And I was like, "Oh, that's great. I've never heard of that song, Leah. Wow, tell me about it. What
Hashtag
does it mean?"
Sarcasm.
You
know, yeah,
she said it on Twitter or in interviews or something like that, but I've read it several times. Since
I saw that in like a Teen Vogue interview that came out like a little bit ago.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I just looked it up, and it was released as a digital single in North America only. So yeah, I would have never heard this song on the radio or anything, and because I don't have the album, I've literally never heard this song.
Caitlin, anyway. Did you like this one?
I mean, I wasn't familiar with the original, but I thought it was pretty. And
it was nice. I was like, the lyrics were quite nice, and it was, you know, I like how she like sang Mary Halloran into sanity, because she became like totally like kind of normal and reasonable. Like, she wasn't like being like, ah, like she was like, she might be a bit kooky, but she was like talking like a competent human being after that. So I was like, okay, I don't really understand what happened. But
I thought she was going to heckle Rachel when she got up.
That's what I thought.
I loved it when she was like, I loved it when she kind of looked at the microphone and she was like, oh God, no. Like, it was funny. The whole diner scene with Mary Halloran, I actually enjoyed.
Yeah, me too.
But the writing scenes, I was like, no.
Okay, so let's get into the showcase, which, where do I even begin? Blaine performs with June at the showcase. He sings the song No Time at All from Pippin. It was pretty good. I mean,
I liked it so much, and I was so surprised, because I've never had an affinity for Pippin. I don't know it that well, but now it's currently running in New York. I don't think it's closed yet. And I was like, I actually now really want to go and watch Pippin. I wish I'd seen it when I was in New York. Like, it's I don't have a huge affinity for it, but I was the amount of songs that they've done from it in this season. Someone's been really keen on Pippin this season because I feel like they've done two or three songs from it. And
yeah, that's true.
And I don't know, I liked it. It was kind of, again, was Shirley MacLaine a Broadway singer as well as an actress?
Let me Google that right as we speak. Shirley MacLaine.
Because she hasn't kept her voice fantastically.
That's what I was thinking too. Yeah. I know she won an Oscar, but I don't know if she was ever a Broadway star. But
she was a Broadway actress, but I don't know about a singer. Yeah,
like with like the Rat Pack and that kind of thing. Like she was very involved in that. I don't know.
Here's her quick Wikipedia. Shirley MacLaine. Whatever, known professionally as Shirley MacLaine, is an American film and theater actor, singer, dancer, activist, and author. She has won the Golden Globe Award for Best Actress in a Motion Picture or Comedy twice for her roles in The Apartment and Irma LaDuce, and the Golden Globe Award for Best Actress Motion Picture Drama twice for Terms of Endearment and Madame Suzatska. Okay. She was honored with the Golden Globe, Cecil B. DeMille Award in 1998. She was nominated for an Academy Award five times before winning the Academy Award for Best Actress in 1983 for Aurora Greenway in Terms of Endearment. She won the 1976 Emmy Award for Outstanding Comedy for music for Gypsy in My Soul. In addition,
she's done Gypsy. She didn't.
Well,
she
Gypsy
done
in My
Rose in Gypsy.
Or? Gypsy in My Soul, which I think is
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I don't either. But I'm not seeing anything here about her musical Broadway career. So maybe not.
I loved her on Downton Abbey.
Yeah, she was in Downton
Abbey. I don't know if anyone watches Downton Abbey. I know her from other movies, but I just remembered that recently she was in Downton Abbey as the sassy American grandmother. And she was her and Maggie Smith as like foils to each other were very hilarious. But I don't know if I've heard her sing before.
Okay, so let's move on here. At the showcase, Blaine gets an encore and invites Kurt onto the stage to sing with him to June's horror. It turns out that June loved it because they sang American Girl by Kanye West and Estelle. And I am sorry to any
American
claims.
Boy, isn't it? Like the
oh, I'm sorry, American Boy,
version.
Yes, yes.
Like, yeah.
Yes, sorry, missed it. I'm so sorry to any Klain fan who loved this. I thought this might have been the absolute worst performance I've ever seen on Glee. And that includes
it was no Candle.
Thong Song.
It was not as bad as Candles.
It was absolutely worse than Candles. I thought Kurt's
Candles was literally
falsetto.
Out of key. It was awful.
But Kurt's falsetto is just, oh my God. I am sorry. Yeah, I was cringing. And
I'm confused by that. Yeah, I'll tell you one thing about Chris Colfer's voice. Is that, yes, he used to be a countertenor. And he used to do a falsetto that was much clearer than this. And his voice has changed, but they keep giving him songs in his upper range like that.
My God.
Like the, when he auditioned, for like Memory, in Cats and from Cats with the, his last episode and all that kind of thing. And I'm like, he actually sounds a lot better with like pop songs in his lower range. I don't know why you're making him do this. I thought the American Boy performance was, like, cute but super dumb. Like, I was like, I really love the song, but I was like, why have you done this song? I don't understand.
I was frowning the entire time.
Like, I thought it was quite, like, sort of brave of Blaine to do that, but it was also in a circumstance where he knew that he was kind of untouchable, if you know what I mean? Like, that June Dalloway wouldn't make a big public fuss and that, like, if she reamed him afterwards, anyone in the audience who already liked him would, come up to her and be like, oh, I like him, and she wouldn't, like, blackball him, if you know what I mean. Like, she, he did it in a very, like, supreme position of power in that situation. The song was ridiculous, but here is the one thing about it that I liked. The way that they pulled everyone up in the Glee Club and they all knew the moves, if you know what I mean, it made me kind of headcanon that this was a past off-screen Glee Club performance. If that makes sense. Like, because they both knew it. Like, they knew how to do it. It was kind of like, Kurt and Blaine had clearly done this before. They knew, the parts that they were doing. And yes, Glee always has miraculous people knowing the right way to sing. But the way that they kind of pull everyone up and that they're doing the moves, I'm like, I want this to have been like a season 3 Glee Club performance that we never saw, if you know what I mean. And that would also explain why Kurt is doing such a terrible song for his voice, because it was like, actually, he first sung it long ago. And so that's my current headcanon about American Boy, which makes me kind of find it cute. But I was a bit like, why is this? Like, really, you're showing this is the song that you're, like, choosing to show off, off Kurt. Like, this is the one.
Right.
Really?
Right. Like, that's what my problem was with it. Was like, this is the, you spent several episodes of our time trying to convince June. I was actually on June's side after this. I was like, no, he should absolutely get off of that stage. This is the Blaine show. Mitch, why don't you weigh in a little bit on this? Did you like this performance or no? And it's okay if you did.
I'm super into this song, and I was, like, rapping along with Kurt. I was really into it. Like, yeah, the song was fun for me because I liked how he would go along with the sexual innuendos, where he would, like, shake his butt when he would say,
no,
like,
it was awkward! Anyway, sorry.
Oh, I forgot we're talking to Natalie, and the opinion's gonna be wrong with her.
No, it's not that. It's just, like, that's exactly what I didn't like. I was like, because Kurt doing that makes him look like a joke. Like, anyway, continue.
It was just fun. It was cute to me. And I think that they're trying to find ways around another Candles performance because, as Natalie very aptly put it when we were just referencing that song, they have two of their lead characters that are a couple with completely clashing voices. And it's hard to try and...
When they sing at the same time in a song, they cannot harmonize with each other.
No, they can't. And it sticks in my mind whenever I see them performing, I'm like... I really hope that this isn't another Candles moment because, I mean, you're right, Natalie, like, they just really, they're like nails on chalkboard together. Some people just cannot sing well together, and they're that group. So they think that this is the best workaround that they can do. They're kind of like playing with the cards that they have.
There are so many Broadway songs that are like a duet that's a call and response, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not two people singing at the same time. It's like back and forth. But anyway.
Well, Come Up May was really good. I thought that they did really well on that one together. I thought it was good because I think that demonstrated both of their vocal ranges perfectly, and I think that this is once again another workaround avoiding having them in the same range at the same time because that's when they struggle, and those are the times I can see Clean being successful in their songs, either rapping or being completely in their own ranges.
Best song they've ever done is still "Baby, It's Cold Outside."
Yeah, I was just about to sing.
Long and like by far, that's the best. That's been the best for their range, and it's because they have Kurt go low and Blaine go high, and it works much better. But anyway,
but, you know, I've had many people. I'm really like into the Glee Christmas songs, especially during the season or even out. So I'm always playing it in my car and stuff. And
people, right?
And people always think that that's a woman singing that part. And that's probably why it was such a good song because he was a very convincing woman for that role, for that part. His voice worked as the woman.
Just the tone, like whether it's male or female, they had him at the right tone and they weren't. When he does his falsetto, it clashes with Darren's voice, like, very badly. But
Very badly.
More than the song, I was more interested in, like, June and Kurt's little exchange, like, after the Pippin song, if you know what I mean, where he was like, she was like, you're such a good friend to, you know, after all of this. And he was kind of like, no, a friend wouldn't put up with this. I'm doing this because he's the love of my life and nothing's going to come between us. Number one, I was like, okay, that was the moment when I was like, okay, I feel like him calling her out like that means it was a homophobic thing, if you know what I mean, that it wasn't like that she was belittling their relationship and he was like, no, it's more than that. But regardless of whether that was like personal or homophobic, I kind of liked that he called her out, I guess, but it was like one moment. His words to her were one moment when I was genuinely convinced in Kurt's feelings, and I'm like, why are you not having him actually being this convincing about Blaine the whole time? Like, I don't. If you want us to like this couple, like, why are we not convinced the whole time? It's not even.
I don't know. This show is really
bizarre.
It just
doesn't seem convincing. It's like Chris Colfer doesn't put it. I think Chris Colfer just doesn't put the effort into acting like Kurt loves Blaine. If you know what I mean, like, and because he doesn't particularly like that plot, but it's like they caught him on one moment where he was like, okay, I'm going to dust off my acting chops and I'm actually going to make an effort in this scene. And he did, and it worked. And I'm like, if he'd actually done that the whole time, maybe I'd believe in Clean, but, Because he don't give a damn, I don't believe in Klain.
How would Chris Colfer be rewarded in Ryan Murphy's eyes for acting the way that I think he also does Natalie, which is very sour toward Klain and very lazy in his acting whenever it comes to a Klain scene, with having a whole episode that he gets to write? How does that equate? It's like, well, you've been shitting on the relationship that I've set up, so go ahead, here's a whole entire episode where you can continue to shit on it.
Chris and Leah and possibly Darren are untouchable by Ryan, pretty much. They're close enough friends with him and too valuable to the show for him to ever be able to really.
So essentially, he's just kind of like, you know what? Like, if I had a way, like, this is Ryan Murphy. He could definitely be like, you know what? It's despite what's happening on Glee, we're always going to be friends. So you know what? Let's leave that as, like, the work side of things, you know? And that's how they get so many allotances and things like, obviously, Chris getting his whole episode.
I don't think that everyone reads Kurt as badly as we do, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't think people give it that much thought, and they believe his words, whereas we're seeing, like, the dead look behind his eyes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, if you think about the fight in the end of the episode being resolved, that bird scene, right? Kurt's eyes were the most dead they possibly could have been, and you could always write it off like, well, he just is really disappointed in their relationship, he's losing hope in it. No, he's been there this whole entire time! That's not a special thing. That's the way he always looks in Klain scenes.
I'm dying for Chris Colfer to do some, like, interview.
You don't understand. Since, like, season 2 or 3 of Glee, I'm like, I need it to be 15 years down the road, and I need the VH1 behind the music. I need it, like, now. Like, I need that so much.
Behind
like,
the curtain, Glee, crazy
I'm
years.
I'm so excited for that. But, yeah, that's Caitlin, American boy, pro or anti?
Anti.
Yay, I agree.
I'm not a big fan of Chris Colfer's voice in general, and it just didn't really work. And I didn't like, narratively, that it was like, Blaine's like, and it's my showcase, so let's showcase Kurt. He was like singing with Shirley MacLaine. I'm like, so Blaine's showcase is not about Blaine at all. That's really
I mean, we're
fantastic.
Assuming that was the end, like that the Pippin song was the finale and he had a bunch of solo songs, but we just didn't get to see them.
Right.
Yeah. My biggest issue was in the conversation after when June was like, you know, telling Blaine, don't let anyone let you doubt things you're sure of. And I was like, don't tell him that, because the only thing he's sure of is how much he's into this relationship.
His priorities
are skewed.
Everyone seems to love the situation. Even June starts dancing along, blah, blah, blah. And they all live happily ever after, whatever. All right.
And you know what? I just had a really good thought about what we were talking about, like Glee tell-alls and whatever else with like how we want that from Chris. It's shocking to me that Jenna didn't do it in her book that she had come out, but I suppose she still had...
No, the show's still running.
That's the thing. I suppose she still had just this errant hope that her character would be picked up a little bit better of a storyline or something, but she wasn't. If she ever had... I feel that if Jenna had the retrospective to be able to look back and say, wow, my character really didn't improve, she might have just gone ahead and just, you know, giant dump on Glee right then and there if she wanted to. Because she's, in my opinion, one of the least well-treated actors on this show in terms of storyline.
I don't know if she cares that much. I don't know that much
about
her.
That's what I was just going to ask.
But I don't think she... you know, from what she's been given, you know, and what she said, she... God, I'm assuming she has money elsewhere because she doesn't really seem to care that much. She doesn't really seem to be, like, pursuing other work. Chris, I think, is actively... has opinions on it, if you know what I mean. I think Jenna was just like, whatever, that was fun. Like,
well, Glee made Chris, and Glee didn't make Jenna. Jenna had her own Broadway career before this, and Chris just kind of jumped into this whole world right then and there, you know?
Yeah. That's a good point. Jenna, as well, is probably still under contract, because when they signed their contracts as regulars in season 1 after the pilot, they're 7-year contracts. So even if she's not being used as a regular, she's they probably still own her, if you know what I mean. They probably say, you can't. Right.
Then how did Joe Jonas take his giant dump on Disney? He had to have been under contract for, like, something at that point.
They definitely broke their contract. The Jonas Brothers broke their contract.
Okay,
They quit their tour without the consent of their record label.
So did they get, like, sued or what?
I don't know. They have enough money to probably back it up. But go read the article. Go read the Joe Jonas article.
No, I'm going to link it now. We have to, because we've been referencing it this whole entire episode.
I know. We have to put it in the
Joe Jonas' giant dump.
The Jonas Brothers definitely cancelled a contracted tour because they didn't want to do it. So,
interesting. Yeah.
Back to Glee, however.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's pretty much it for Blaine and Kurt for this season.
Think they're going to be like next season? Is this just going to be more of same? Because I don't think I can handle that.
I think, here's what I think is going to happen. This is just my personal opinion about it. I think they're going to break up somewhere at the beginning of the season. They're going to go through the whole season realizing they can't be without each other again. And then, you know, it's going to be happily ever after in some way for them. That's what I think. Even though it doesn't feel that way at all at the moment, I just really don't see Ryan Murphy and team writing the final part of this whole series without them being together.
They're gonna get married.
Or maybe the time jump that we're going to see next season is they're already married. Maybe we skip the wedding and everything.
Yeah. We'll have a Broadway baby.
Maybe they'll get married. No, I want them to get married, and then I want them to realize it was a mistake and that they hate each other and get divorced.
That's what all the fan fiction I will write will look like.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, yeah, all right. But
so
the
last
Rachel
parts of this episode. Yeah, let's get to the last parts. So the episode starts winding down. Sam says that he's actually going to be leaving New York and returns to McKinley. We touched on that earlier, but this was actually a little bit of a surprise for me because I thought Sam was a great comedic comedic relief, is that comic relief, for an otherwise sort of serious tone, you know, and he even had his like serious moments. I really enjoyed Sam the most I've ever enjoyed him in season 5, and I really was kind of sad to see that he was maybe going back to Lima, because from all we've heard, you know, season 6 is exclusively in New York City. Yeah, I don't know. Any final thoughts about Sam back in McKinley? We already talked about it.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he's in season 6. I don't really understand what he's doing at McKinley. Like, I don't really understand why he, again, like we said, why he's in the school. Like, he was clearly looking into the choir room that's now a computer lab. Like, what the plan's going to be. Like, if he's going to go revive the Glee Club with Mr. Shu, please no. I don't ever want to see Mr. Shu again. And
it's interesting we didn't see Mr. Shu at all in the season finale.
No, it's not. It's a good thing.
No, it is.
It's a good thing. Let's sweep him under the rug.
They probably didn't feel like paying him. Like, it was great. It was good. But we know they still have the set. They still have the choir room.
Yeah.
They didn't break it down.
Well, wait. Maybe my memory's failing me, but I'm still under the impression that the last time we saw the choir room was the behind-the-scenes set picture of it being destroyed that, like, the Glee Twitter sent
out. It wasn't destroyed. It was empty, but he was looking into it with those computer labs in it.
Yeah.
Okay, so the computer labs were into it now.
Yes.
But wasn't there a behind-the-scenes set picture that some actor or something tweeted out that literally showed, like, sledgehammer to floor, like, destruction of the choir room, right? Or am I imagining
I haven't seen that.
Just that one that was empty.
Okay, it was just empty. That's good. Yeah. I wanted to just make sure I wasn't living in two alternate universes. All right.
And I don't know. Like, I don't really want him. Like, I like Sam a lot, and I feel like he has a lot of layers that could make him a very interesting character to focus on, but they kind of don't always seem to know what to do with him.
Yeah. Well, what about the do you want me to talk about the solo that Sam had at that part, John? Because we haven't ventured into the song, but I think
go ahead.
Yeah, so like, I think the part of the song that he had was surprisingly good. I never really seen Cord as a standout actor or performer in any aspect. I've just kind of liked his abs, I guess. I really liked his little riffing that he was doing on the about this, whatever that part of the song is.
It was very metaphorical. They literally all had a solo they all had a solo focus moment. Well, at least Artie, Sam, Rachel, and I think Mercedes all had a solo focus.
What about
line.
Britney? She's Pardon? Just. But what about Britney? Because she only had this. She had like one or two shots of her actually singing. Other than that, it was just
jumping
around.
Well, it's not her story. It's not her storyline.
Well, I get that, but I'm trying to make the joke that there were like one or two moments that she showed up, and I just couldn't help but laugh because they had her doing like that that ba da doom ba doom the whole time, and she just looks like a fish looking at the tank, just blubbing away, and I was like, oh no.
Oh no.
Well, the reason I think that this was actually a pretty good song choice, despite the fact that it was kind of strange that they did it, this is Pompeii by Bastille, and was that they all had the solo focus line, including Sam when he's looking in the, you know, the window, and including Artie when he's going back to film school all alone, all of that, and they all have a focus on the chorus line, which is, how am I going to be an optimist about this? Like, which is the whole...
Yeah.
It was very, we don't usually like it when Glee has a song that's like obviously telling
to
the
us.
Stories, if you know what I mean. But this I kind of liked. There was a lot of different parts in it that were like very, very metaphorical in a very kind of subtle way. Like even like the metaphor of like Pompeii, like a dying city, like if you know what I mean, like that everything happening in this city is falling in. There's a line that, like, is literally many days fell away with nothing to show, and it's like, yeah, we just wasted a whole season in New York and now they're leaving, if you know what I mean? And it's probably my favorite. Number one, I love Bastille. I love this album.
Me
anyway,
too.
And this was the thing,
oh, my God.
This was the thing I was going to fight with Jack about, because he thinks the Bastille are terrible and pointless, and I think that he thinks this just
we would have teamed up against him.
I would have been on Jack's team. This would have been a fun debate.
I think that he... thinks that because they were indie and got popular, and he has very little respect for those situations.
Those youngsters, they always have.
Yeah, I was like,
attitude.
Yeah, this is a very 18-year-old attitude. Yeah, exactly. Right now, but okay, but we'll see. You know, maybe he has a different reason. But I have known Bastille for a really long time. Dan from Bastille, he used to do these mixtapes. So anyway, they're very, very, very good, and I think the way that they layer sound is really beautiful. And I really am pro
the album
Bastille.
Is so freaking.
Yeah, their whole Anyway, so I like Bastille, and I like this song, and anyway, I thought it was a weirdly brilliant song choice, and the best Glee has ever done at kind of singing the situation without hardcore slapping you in the face with it. I really liked that. But aside from the song itself, which, and again, the amount of like street people they had and drums was really... really cool. It's Rachel and her entire choice to actually make this show and quit Funny Girl, because they tell her that they're going to make the pilot, and then she's like, I'm going to LA, yay. This is the key situation. This is the key situation of the entire season. This is the biggest point of the episode. What the hell, Rachel? Like, what the hell? It just seems, you know, earlier in the episode, she was saying, if I do this show, I can come back to Broadway and get more money for any show I want. You know, what the hell? Like, Fanny was like her, like, dream, like her Rushmore, if you know what I mean. They wasted this plot. They should have had her get into a show this season that wasn't her massive dream, if you know what I mean. They should have got her get a part that she was just excited to get, you know, a Broadway part, if you know what I mean, and it be Funny Girl. Something, you know, something more simple. And since when is... you know, has being on TV and like doing that been anywhere near what she always wants? This, she's always talked about Tonys and Broadway, and it's like as soon as the idea of TV was presented, it's like her new life dream, if you know what I mean.
Natalie, do you see any comparisons to Smash Season 1 and them giving the opening night out? I'm thinking of Season 2. They had the opening night earlier than I thought they should have. The opening for Hit List, I thought would have been at the end of Season 2, and that's what I'm feeling with Rachel, because...
I think it worked with Smash, because I think the competition was important in Smash between Hit
List
the
Tony's competition.
I think that was important, and I think it was important for the Kyle and Jimmy story, but and Derek's story as well. I think that Smash Season 2 was nearly flawless, and I think that... I think that the Funny Girl plot in Glee was completely wasted. I disagree.
Let's hear it, Caitlin.
Okay. So my thing, I feel like the entire point of the Funny Girl plot has been that Rachel's dreams in the wake of losing Finn have changed, and she is allowed to change her dreams because her life has been completely upended. I feel like the point of her telling Shu that she bought the ticket for Finn even though, you know, he can't come, she had the ticket for Finn on her opening night, is like representative of the fact that she made this dream and then she got there and said, this isn't actually it, because it was part of this dream that I had with Finn at the end, and now I can't have that. So her desires have to shift to accommodate that.
See, I can totally get behind that and understand that, but I don't think that they've played it that way. I can understand thinking that and making that work, if you know what I mean. I can understand that have been a really beautiful plot, but they haven't played her acting that way. And in my opinion, anyway, and I don't really, and if they were going to do that, I think that they should have, because that they should have given more thought to what they were making her say and what they were making her feel, because the way that they've done it just seems like really afterthought-y.
I completely agree, Natalie. I do see what you're saying too, though, Caitlin. That's a really great point that I hadn't even thought of. But another thing too is, you know, we're heading into the final season. We, you know, they're going to want to really bring Rachel back to her roots. And I think that in appealing to the nostalgia of the series that has such a hardcore fandom, maybe she has to sort of give up what she loves the most before she realizes how much she loves it. So maybe in season six, we'll see part of it be, you know, her going to LA and learning that TV is not exactly what she wanted to be. And she'll come back to some bigger dream. But like you said, Natalie, what is bigger than her Fanny, than the role
like,
of Fanny?
I mean, the thing that she says, she, you know, when they're reading the revised version of the script, which they like, which that quote she reads aloud, was that actually a Glee quote? Was that something from the past of Glee? Because it rung very familiar with me. If you know
I don't
what I mean.
Remember.
Like, the thing that she, like the closing line that she read aloud, I'm going to Google it because it rang so familiar with me. And I'm sure that this show that they're making is going to be based on Glee, if you know what
I mean. Well, that's great. Why don't you Google that while we talk about the very final scene?
Well, John, I have an important note that I feel Rachel has then broken her contract, keeping within the theme of breaking contracts in this episode of Glee Chat. And although we don't have a confirmation of how long her contract was, that was definitely something that was said to, like, in the near future, if you ever break this contract again, I will sue you or your pants off kind of deal.
Yeah.
And that
I
happened
mean,
now,
I would have liked to think, like, if, again, this is more going to be a discussion for after the episode, because it's going to prove how, you know, there's questions about how far ahead in time we're going to be. Right. But a pilot takes a while to get off the ground, and I would have liked to have the idea that she had the pilot all contracted in, but she's already been in Funny Girl for, say, 4 or 5 months. I would have liked her to do a full year, if you know what I mean. Like, go to LA in 6 months and do it. Like, don't do it. Or take off a week, go and make the pilot, and then go to LA when the show actually gets picked up in 6 months, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean? I would have liked to see her do the full year in Funny Girl, you know, for the sake of proving that she could commit to something, and, you know, the actual fact that she wanted that, and, you know, the fact that apparently she's going to get sued if she doesn't. And,
well, where is her level of commitment if she can't stick with Niada, she can't stick with Funny Girl? Is she going to even stick by this pilot?
That's a good point. That's a very good point, actually.
She did say, like, you know, what she said about, you know, I always thought Fanny was my dream, but this, like, being able to be myself, this is it, or whatever, you know, which is a nice thought, but again, it's kind of the first we ever heard of her dreams changing in that way. Yeah. Like, they might have been trying to show it to us, but it didn't really read like that to me, and I like Caitlin's idea a lot. But yeah. I would like them to convince me more in the show.
Well, so basically, just to wrap it up here, in terms of what happened on the actual episode, Rachel finds out that they're making a pilot for her new show. And at the end of the episode, she's walking down the street. They're still singing Pompeii by Bastille. And the very last half second of the season shows her looking directly into the camera. We're still meant to be viewing it as audience of Glee. And essentially, she's breaking the fourth wall by looking into the camera and walking away. It's literally a split second. I was absolutely shocked. And I tried to, like...
It was very jarring.
Excuse me. Yeah, exactly. It was very, very jarring. And for me, I think, you know, and I've kind of poked around with some of you guys on the show and other Glee fans just to see what they thought about it. And for me, first of all, I was shocked because I couldn't believe that they would break the fourth wall before the final season. I thought that was kind of interesting. But I also was thinking, wait a minute. If you go back and you look at Rachel in this very last scene where she's walking down the street, it's very like – okay, action. And she's walking down the street and there's people dancing around her. And for me, and especially her outfit, she's wearing the old Rachel Berry hat that we've seen. To me, it felt like, oh, this is like a scene from her new show.
Yes.
And
yeah,
I
kind of thought that.
She looked up at the sky at Finn before she looked at the camera.
Yes, exactly. And it just felt to me like this isn't Rachel walking down the street.
This
and
is Rachel, the character. Like,
the character, yeah. Especially with the hat. I don't know about, you know, there's always people jumping and dancing all around no matter what, you know, where we are in Glee. But
and the
with
fact
the hat,
even that Kurt said, like, oh my God, I could just burst into song, which was also very kind of almost wall breaky, if you know what
I
mean.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. And, you know, the dancers around her just, it really seemed like they're making a movie or a TV show. It didn't feel like it was an organic part of Glee as we know it, as listeners and viewers. So I would be curious to see how that segues into season six. Is that the beginning of season six, where actually season six is the untitled Rachel Berry project? Is that, like, maybe the season finale of her show? You know, like, I think there's so much narrative to construct around that particular part of the scene. And my God, it was only, what, maybe 10 or 15 seconds.
John, you just reminded me of when we thought Roxanne cracked, like, what was it, the season four secret? I think you've cracked the season six secret with me right now, because your thought led to my thought that we're going to, if this wasn't, I think this was your thought. If it wasn't, then I came up with it. Anyways, season six will be complete.
I'll take credit, yeah.
It will be completely the Rachel Berry project.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying.
Okay, so you were just saying that, and...
Yeah.
Okay, so is that supposed to be the, to quote Ryan Murphy, not quite a bomb, but an explosion, but not really a bomb, but an explosion thing. You know, like...
What?
Remember, he had some weird quote when he was like, a bomb's going to go off, but not really an explosion, just something equivalent. So is that supposed to be it? Is that supposed to be...
Yeah, just to recap for those who... Yes, Ryan Murphy had recently said, and we reported about it on Hypeable, that there's a giant moment in season five that sets up season six. And, you know, for me, I didn't think that there was anything, oh my God, so giant.
Getting the show? Like,
yeah, is it getting the show? But for me, I don't think knowing Ryan, you know, knowing what Ryan has typically teased in the past and how those things coordinate...
Okay.
So I didn't think that was it.
I've got the answer. The answer is that she's decided to quit Funny Girl, and she hasn't got enough money, and they sue her for $1 million, and she has to go to debtor's prison, and season six of Glee is just basically the same as Orange is the New Black.
And they already use Cell Block Tango.
There's my theory.
Yeah.
Pops. That's interesting. In Chicago is the prison musical. Done. Game over.
Oh my God. There we go.
Yes. Oh, Roxy Hart, Rachel Berry. It just fits.
Oh dear. Anyway, no, that's not really true. But no. I don't know. I didn't feel like there was a. It might have been the break fourth wall moment. He might have just been over dramatizing about her getting the new show, even though it had been leading up to it. Like, there was shocker, like, oh my God, we've never heard this before, like, moment.
But don't
like,
you think that her looking at the camera means something?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah. And Mitch and Caitlin, you would agree as well.
I feel like if it doesn't, then they don't know how to make television.
Right. Well, that's what I was saying. It's like a lot of Glee fans, well, let's not get into that, you know, that topic. But I just felt like, you know, I was talking to Glee fans on Twitter and back and forth, and I was really surprised at how nobody thought, not nobody, but certain people didn't think it was this big of a deal. But for me, that's a huge moment for a series.
If you know anything about storytelling, like from a creative perspective, as opposed to having never really given it much thought, that is definitely, like, if they've just chosen to change the context of the show in that way, if it doesn't mean something, then they are doing storytelling badly.
And the other thing, too, is her look at the camera isn't, like, an accidental look that maybe...
No, it's very curious and kind of saucy. Like,
and she's like,
it's like, so you've been watching me, you know?
Exactly.
It's like the moment she finally realized, I am Rachel Berry on a TV show on the Fox network called Glee, and now I, as a character, am aware of my actions. It's like House of Cards-ish.
Yeah. It's so fascinating.
Maybe
I mean,
that all of Glee was fictional in the world of,
that's
like,
what I was thinking,
that's
too.
What I was thinking.
Yeah, even in the world of Glee, Glee is fictional.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's the real world? Oh, no. This is turning into Lost all over
that's
again.
That's what I was going to say, yes. It's so much Lost in all of our theories that we were hoping for at the
but
end
it,
of season
it's
four.
Just, it's too much for Glee to handle. It just won't go that far. I do, unfortunately, think that this is just another example of bad story writing on Glee, and it was probably just like, let's just give Rachel a little bit of a sassy look in the end. I think the audience would really appreciate that.
Yeah, I don't think it's that, but I think that there's definitely a lot of there's a lot to speculate over over a long time, because this is a great segue into the news portion of the show.
Oh yeah,
where we just found out this week that Glee will actually, according to Fox, be held for mid-season, which means that it won't return in the fall of 2014 as it typically has every year. It will return in January of 2015. And, you know, it's kind of a weird thing because obviously Glee has really actually sunk to new lows. The season finale had a total of 1.9 million viewers, which there are episodes of television shows on cable that get far, far higher viewers than that. So yeah. To have
the
a
CW
one
really that night, the CW's ratings beat Fox that night.
That's really low for network television.
Yeah, it is.
Given that Glee's high has been like 12 to 14 million in season two, in season two they were averaging about 8 million, with like the Super Bowl getting up to like 12 or 14 million.
I think the Super Bowl had 20 million viewers.
I don't know. It was a lot.
Yeah,
but
it was a lot.
The average for season two was 8 to 10 million.
Which is great. That's like ideal for a network, you know, for broadcast. But
it was killing it. Like, it was massive.
And so 1.9, that's not even their, you know, the key demo is really female 18 to 49, which I don't even know what those numbers were. They had to be abysmal. So, yes, it got pushed to mid-season in 2015, and a Fox executive has also said that for now the episode order is 20, but with ratings at a season finale of 1.9, I wouldn't be surprised if they did a 13-episode order for the season finale. Yeah. I know it's terrible, but...
But you know what? That could be exactly what Glee needs. It really could be season one's first 13 episodes all over again. Nice, tight, no filler, going right from point A to point B, no room to mess up, and just doing it and being done.
Yeah, if they wrote it in a bubble in the way that they wrote all of the first 13 and filmed all of the first 13 in like a one block bubble without really much outside influence, if they could do that for the finale and really, really bring something good, that would be nice.
But, and I think another question that has to be asked is, are we ever going to see Marley, Jake, and that whole team ever again? They just disappeared after the winter hiatus. Caitlin, what are your thoughts?
I mean, they were saying at one point that we would see McKinley again next season, but this was before all the changes going around. But God, I hope so. They got shafted so hard episode thing. Like, and I mean, I'm a huge New Directions stan. I love them as a team, and I was just so upset about how they were treated and their complete lack of farewell. So I will be very upset if we don't see them.
And not just to them as actors and characters, but to the audience. I mean, you know, first half of the season, we were totally invested in that crew, and then they just disappear without any sort of mention, you know? Like, no wonder they didn't have a lot of people watching the final half of the season, but what can you do? So that's pretty much it. Oh, go ahead, Natalie.
I mean, the one thing that we don't really know as well is, within the series of the show, within Rachel, you know, the new Rachel Berry show that allegedly is going to be in LA and all of that, you know, something that's been really debated and, you know, they've sort of hinted at in interviews is, when is this going to take place in universe?
Right.
Like, is it going to people? And people seem to think from, I don't know who said this, but the common thought going around is that it's going to be like 3 years in the future. That it's not going to be like 6 months down the line. It's not going to be immediately.
Why gone. 3 years?
I don't know. This is just apparently a thing that's going around. Yeah. I don't know if someone mentioned it in an interview and now it's taken off, but that it's going to be several years. And I don't know if that'll be like the pilot having taken that long to get picked up, or if it'll be totally already established and everyone will be totally different now. Like, I don't know. But what would you like to see?
I mean, my thing is, yeah, that's a great point. And I think for me personally, as a fan, you know, I wonder if they're sort of leaving it a little bit open-ended in that way because they aren't sure how many episodes they're even going to have for next season.
Yeah.
The other question is, when does production start? If they're being held for 2015, do they start in August July like they typically do? You know, a lot of things will shift, and I think it really depends on what they have to work with, you know, because they do – just like with Lost – sorry to keep going back to Lost, but – or any series that has – an established final endpoint. You know, I think How I Met Your Mother might have had something like that or something. But Lost, you know, from season, I think, 2 or 3 and on, everyone knew that season 6, I think was 6, yeah, was going to be the end. And for me, I mean, for me in season 6, I would just like to, I don't know. I mean, I like where we are in terms of Rachel's career. I'd like to see some more nostalgia in season 6. I mean, everyone loves nostalgia after 6 seasons in a series finale. You know, you want to feel that original thought that we all felt back in 2008 or 2009 when Glee surfaced and we were all like, oh my God, this show is amazing. I want to feel that again. Because I feel like even those episodes in the last couple of seasons that we've been like, oh my God, this was such a good episode, it still very much missed the mark from what season 1 and 2 used to be. You know what I mean? I think that we've sort of forgiven Glee in some ways. So for me, I just want to feel that original, you know, bust the windows out your car type of feeling that I had when Mercedes. Yeah.
It is so weird that you just mentioned bust your windows out your car, because I had that song on my mind this whole entire day, and I was wishing for a moment. The same thought you just had. That's weird.
That's funny.
That's really weird. That was a really cool mind meld. That must mean something.
What about you, Natalie?
I know that I should. I
almost said Rachel.
I'm going to be really stuck on this, but I want to know, no matter when they come back, like if it's, you know, I would like 1 year. I would like them to be starting the pilot and for Rachel to have left Broadway in an elegant and legitimate and non-controversial way. I would, if you know what I mean. I would like her to have organized a long enough run for it to be respected, if you know what I mean. Maybe she got nominated for the Tony and didn't get it or whatever, and we don't see any of that. Like, I would like to see her leave Funny Girl in a legitimate way without it being, like, right off the bat and, you know, ruining that first opportunity. And then, you know, if we can – and maybe be, like, you know, ready to start the pilot. But I don't know. What's going to happen? Is she just going to, like, cast all her friends in it? Are Kurt and Blaine going to just be living in the loft alone together in New York, like, having their weird relationship? Like,
Maybe it's a reality show. Who knows?
That would be weird. But, I don't know. Caitlin?
There are so many pros and cons for wherever they decide to pick it up. Like, Rachel said, in 6 months, let's do this. So I immediately said, oh, so they're going to pick up in 6 months.
Yeah. So here we are.
Yeah.
And that, even that point would be like, she'd been in Funny Girl at that point for, say, a year, if you know what I mean, was about to, maybe she'd taken taken a week off to do the pilot, and then it got picked up 6 months later, and now she's going to go make the real show. And then she could leave Funny Girl after a year's run, and that would be a nice, clean, non-suing anyone situation.
Yeah. Mitch, what about you?
I think I've already voiced my opinion on how I think it's going to end up. I feel that she is actually going to get away with it, because Glee would have mentioned the fact that, oh, Rachel's leaving without, you know, the suing. So she's going to definitely get her pilot all set up, and it's going to be the success that it wants to be, because I do think that we're going to be quite a while away. Like, I could see us being at least, like, 2 years away from where we are. Maybe, if anything, just try and catch up to the ages of the actors rather than being 19-year-olds like they're supposed to be right now. You know, it's kind of laughable if you think about it, but I just don't anymore, because I'm just like, eh.
So we'll say this is ending in May. It's now May, and it's not going to come back till, say, you know, a little over 6 months from now, January. Mm-hmm. So 6 months would be a literal realistic gap. Like, it would be, you know, they would be in the same current timeline as us. It would be interesting if they go 2 or 3 years into the future where they're meant to be in, like, 2016, 2017.
Right.
And, I mean, that would cover, you know, any songs that they wanted to do from the past, if you know what I mean. We wouldn't be like, oh, this song doesn't exist yet in Glee universe. But
which is funny, though, because, I mean, it also means that they technically are in the future.
They wouldn't be talking about any current music.
Well, they wouldn't be talking about current news, and also, why would they be doing so many older songs? Why would that matter to them anymore? Like,
I suppose.
Like, their current pop songs wouldn't be the same as our current pop songs, so why are they performing, I don't know, Lady Gaga's latest single or whatever?
Going a couple of years into the future has benefits.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Has benefits in a few ways, but it has a little bit of a, like, they're not going to be able to be, like, all current affairs-y like they used to, if you know what I mean.
It just seems weird that they would make, like, an actual reference to 6 months in the future and then, like, go 2 years. Like, That was deliberate.
Yeah, I feel like it'll fit really well. Again, it will sort of catch them up to, like, you know, they'd start filming it, you know, or, you know, it.
Yeah.
If we saw it in January, that would just be, like, 1 month ahead of where they actually were in the universe of the show. So that is definitely something they should be considering, you'd think.
But then it's like, I'm sorry to even go into this. I'm just in my TV mind because I'm still here at work. But, like, you know, they do come back in January, six months later from May. But they're going to have been filming during the fall and winter months. So how are they going to reflect – or, I mean, sorry, the summer and fall months. So how are they going to reflect the winter in that scene? You know, it's like – it's so bizarre.
They will have a Christmas album. Do not worry, John. They always will.
Sorry, what was that? Christmas album, Mitch? Was that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're not going to have a Christmas episode, like, I hope, because it's going to come back in January.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much it for our recap of the season 5 finale of Glee. And a lot of you, as soon as this, which I love this, by the way, we posted on Glee, or sorry, on Hypeable about Glee coming back in 2015. And a majority of the comments were like, that sucks, but what sucks more is that Glee Chat won't be back until then, which it's so funny. A lot of people tell us that they don't even watch Glee anymore. They just listen to Glee Chat, which I guess is good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I feel like you might be wasting your time, but
yeah. The good news is we'll always be here to recap the latest Glee episodes, but we will be putting out episodes throughout the summer and the fall. We're still working on exactly what those might be. I know that we're going to be doing Glee Chat After Dark episodes in the meantime, because they're obviously won't be as much Glee news through the summer as there typically is. And we're probably going to be rehashing old episodes. We're still working on that, figuring out exactly what we'll do. But don't worry, come fall, you'll have Glee Chat on at least a bi-weekly basis at the very least. So that's – don't worry. We're still here for you. Natalie, what were you saying?
Oh, I was just going to say,
disagree.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about, you know, trying to watch some – episode season 1 and 2 episodes, maybe even season 3 if we like want to do, you know, a retrospective of you know what it was like our first time recapping, but you know, more brief kind of like, you know, thoughts in retrospect. And I'm trying to put together a list of like some of the best of episodes, so if anyone has any episodes they really think we need to look at, I'd like, if we do this, I'd like to kind of do it chronologically, not every episode, but say watch like the pilot episode for season 1 and then like, you know, go through chronologically, it's some of the best of Glee, so I'm going to try and gather those ideas from everyone.
And we can also give Caitlin and even Jack a little bit more, you know, airtime, since they've only been around a little while.
Yeah, my ideas currently is to get, like, you know, every, you know, everyone to kind of pick their favorites and lead the episode that they've picked, if you know what I mean.
So and I'd also like to... Yeah, Caitlin, Mitch, do you guys think that's a good idea?
Dibs on the Spanish teacher. No, not really.
No!
No!
Spanish teacher!
Don't make it happen.
Say it ain't so.
But I mean, some of the big ones I've just off the top of my head is like the pilot, Preggers, Wheels, the finale of season 1.
Never I mean, we've always...
Sorts of other ones. The Super Bowl one. Yeah,
we've always wanted to do that. I've just always kind of said, oh, maybe we should put it off to when Glee isn't on air so that we have more material and a longer time.
There's such a big gap now that
right.
we may not carry on after Glee finishes for good, you know, so it might be.
Yeah. Maybe we will in a different format, yeah.
Yeah, this is the time. Yeah,
this is the time
for the recaps, if we can make it work.
Insert Darren Criss singing an Imagine Dragons song here.
It's time to be.
There we go.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Well, don't forget to follow us on social media at Glee Chat on Instagram and Facebook.com/GleeChat and on Twitter at Glee_chat. And that's pretty much it for this episode. We will be back very soon with more episodes. We might even do some fun game trivia episode just because we haven't done that in so long. I think actually since season 3. And fans really love that, so we should definitely do it.
Oh, yeah. They were fun.
There's like Glee quiz up now, so we could get like the questions.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, good idea.
And those were intense questions. I remember I really didn't know a lot of those answers. It was things like, what was the color of Quinn's nail polish when she revealed to Tara that she was, you know, it was really like...
Yeah. Well, if you remember, a couple years ago, I purchased Glee Cranium for that specific reason. I was like, hey guys, should I buy this?
There's a Glee Cranium?
Yeah, or is it Glee? Yeah, it's Glee Cranium.
Not Glee Seen It?
No, it's not Seen It. It's definitely like Glee Cranium, I believe.
Like, I can see like Glee Monopoly even, maybe. No. But like Cranium? I've never seen a different brand for Cranium. And for all brands, well, Glee? What?
I know that it's not... it's at least trivia, because I remember, I don't have it anywhere near me, or it's actually back home in Maryland, but it definitely had like boxes of trivia questions. So,
well, I guess that makes sense, like the performance aspect, because you have to like hum songs.
And the humdingers, yeah.
Yeah, and like, yeah, acting out stuff, yeah.
So maybe we'll just
have to
do that.
I don't even know what this game is, but okay, we'll get into
it. Oh my god, Cranium is like the best board game ever made.
You have a little, like,
get used to it.
There's four sections. You have a pile of dough. You get to make stuff. You get to draw things with your eyes closed. You get to hum a song, and you get to say trivia facts or something. It's kind of, you know, it's fun. It's really, it's a good time.
You know what'd be really fun is to play Glee Cranium on like a Google Hangout or something,
where like you were like the one controlling each little, yeah, you know, little piece and all that. That'd be cute.
Like have a camera on the actual board, and then the other four of us have to like play it and hum it out and everything. That would be fun.
Oh my god.
It would be so fun. Maybe we'll do it for a Glee Chat episode.
Natalie, it's like that's like your 15th exasperated oh my god for this episode.
Well, I don't even know what it is. Like, I don't think we have that game here.
Oh, so. Okay. Caitlin, you've played Cranium, right?
I have.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It is enjoyable.
Caitlin, by the way, how are you feeling? Any better from last week?
I am still mostly bedridden.
Oh my god, that's so annoying. Well, we're thinking about you and hope that you feel better. Everybody send Caitlin nice thoughts and positive energy so she feels better if you're listening.
To unpinch my nerve.
Yes, if you know how to unpinch a nerve, please contact Caitlin immediately.
Speaking of things sent to Caitlin, I remember there was one specific item that was sent to you a while back when we were doing like donations and all that to get you like really cool fan of me things. And one of them was a bracelet. Do you get to wear that bracelet? Does it, like, fit? I was always wondering about that. I never asked.
Wait, Mitch, can you give a little more context for those that might not understand?
It's up to Caitlin however much she wants me to.
Sure, yeah.
Share. You can tell.
Okay, yes. Caitlin had an ovarian cyst that she had surgery on. She was out of commission for a while, and
yeah.
I gathered together a lot of people from the Hypeable, and we decided to donate to Caitlin, you know, gifts and fun things from like Etsy. And one of them was The Last Airbender bracelet. And I'm really curious, like I was saying, is it, if it fits, because I was guessing what your wrist size was, and that's not something you know about someone. But did it fit?
It does. It's adorable.
Oh, that's perfect. Okay, that really made my heart sing.
I love the idea of Mitch sitting in a room being like, okay, and then like tapping his face. How big would Caitlin's wrist be?
I don't even know how big my own wrist is. It's just...
Yeah, exactly. Me either. That's
it's worse so than shoe size or ring size. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, Caitlin, feel better. At least this means that you can podcast with us. You know what I mean? There are some positives that you can take away.
I can be a podcasting super machine from bed.
Yes, I love it. I love that. Well, I do hope you feel better, and we're definitely thinking about you. So good luck with all of that stuff.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for episode 82 of Glee. This is the end of Glee season 5. I'm kind of excited, so let's clap about it. Woohoo!
Yay! Woo-hoo!
Is it like excited that we got through it? Excited that
I don't know. It's a mix of emotions. It's a mix of emotions.
Probably the weirdest season of Glee.
Absolutely.
Oh my god.
Up and downs.
Yeah, very bizarre. All right,
if you want to give yourself a good perspective, party thoughts. I promise, John. If you want to give yourself a good perspective of where we're fitting. In the beginning of the season, Artie and Kitty were just, like, starting to be a thing.
Oh
now,
my God,
now look at your brain
right.
Where you are. Like, that's probably, I think, one of the best spectrums you can see.
That's a really good point.
It's really weird. Oh God, yeah. So, we've weirdest season of Glee, I'd have to agree.
Remember sure. That one moment where Rachel and Sam were going to be a thing?
Oh, yeah. I can't forget
all right,
it.
Let's not end it on a low note like that. All right, that's it. Everybody say goodbye, and we'll see you very soon.
Goodbye, and we'll see you very soon.
And we'll see you very soon.
Bye, guys.